when we meet her, we think everything is really just working out exactly the way that she's always wanted to. And what we realize slowly is that along the way, she might have lost herself a little bit in order to gain all of this. And it takes this person from her past, Fred, to kind of wake her up to the things that meant something to her and that she believed in when she was younger.
Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. That was Charlize Theron talking of Theron, actually, to be perfectly honest. That is how you pronounce her name. Talking about her new movie, Long Shot, that she stars in with Seth Rogen.
It's Long Shot, actually.
That's Bill McCuddy. I'm Neil Rosen. We're joined again, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
You know, in Afrikaans, her name is pronounced Thron.
But don't cry for her, Argentina.
We're going to talk about the new Dennis Quaid movie, The Intruder. We're going to talk about Ask Dr. Ruth. I saw a bunch of movies at Tribeca Film Festival. We'll talk about that. And, it's going to be just a really interesting podcast. So let's start talking about Long Shot in this particular movie. Why don't one of you guys tell us what the movie's about?
Bill, do it.
I think it's called Long Shot because in this movie, a guy that looks like Seth Rogen can date a woman that looks like Charlize Theron. Did you see her on The Tonight Show, by the way, last night?
No.
She's got an all-new look. She has dark hair, super short, and she looks really, really radically different. I'm not going to say
good
or bad. I prefer her as a blonde. Apparently, so does Seth Rogen. She's Secretary of State or some cabinet fixture, young female, obviously. And she works for a president, played by Bob Odenkirk, who used to be on television and watches his old episodes over and over and over again. A little bit of Reagan, a little bit of Donald Trump. And
well, he wants to leave the presidency to...
Yeah, he's going back into acting.
To go into movies and TV, which is really the important thing, according to him.
Right. Well, listen, according to our current president, he probably feels the same way. Listen, it's very funny. Seth Rogen is a very liberal, youngish reporter for something like The Village Voice or someone like Underground-y kind of paper that a Rupert Murdoch-type character buys, which insults him. So he quits in the first day, and he becomes a speechwriter for Charlize as she's out on the campaign trail. She's going to make a run for the presidency. Now, it's not only completely unbelievable that these two would ever be romantically together, all the situations in which, including a bombing or like an attack in a southern, I'm going to say South American location, are all completely unbelievable. And none of that matters because, to me, this thing is laugh out loud funny from beginning to end. I didn't care whether I bought the premise or not.
You didn't mind the bodily fluids?
There is an over-the-top kind of there's something about Mary Grossout moment that a lot of people are complaining. It doesn't have the finesse of something like that.
Oh, I don't agree.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Would you guys see this with your daughters?
I would see it with my daughter.
Yeah.
But I would warn anyone that there's something that happens that you will see coming. So anyway,
my daughter is 25. If my daughter was 10 or 11, no, I would not see it with my daughter. But, you know, I think anywhere above 15, sure. Bill Brigoli, before I check in with my opinion, what did you think? Even though I know what you thought of the film, tell us what you thought of the film.
I didn't buy a lot of it, and I really disliked the fact that he yelled during the entire movie.
Yeah, his I've been hearing that too. He yells in the beginning, but I don't think that. Listen, there's an old comedy rule about say it faster, say it louder, and it'll be funnier. I think a little of that is going on in this movie, but let's take a mood check on everyone. Did you see it with a regular audience? Or was it just a bunch of critics?
Bill and I saw it together.
I saw it with Neil, so
was
obviously
a screening room?
I was in a
I don't
bad
remember.
Mood.
It was
a screening room. It was Dolby 88, which is a loud room.
But
for
did they let
like
civilians
Rogen.
In?
Yes, they did.
Okay, so that was
they
my experience,
the house
too.
With like audience
right, so
like
I saw it at the Bryant Park screening room, and it was filled to the... And it was clearly like some
Why
radio
station.
Why
didn't you like it before I check in on my opinion?
He was loud... They're good together. I'll say that much. But he was loud, and the, as Bill mentioned, the setups weren't believable at all.
Okay, I loved the film. I thought it was very funny. I agree with Bill McCuddy. Is it realistic? No. Do I care? No. I just went along for the ride. In the beginning of the movie, before he's an unemployed journalist, Seth Rogen is, this is the way the movie starts, he's infiltrating this modern-day neo-Nazi group, and he's posing as a neo-Nazi before he gets thrown out on his ass, and they realize they discover that he's Jewish. And that's a very funny scene. And there's many funny scenes. There's a scene later in the movie that's, again, completely unrealistic when her and the Secretary of State, who's running for president, sneak off and do Molly, the drug Molly, together and go to some club. And that's okay, but I don't really care. I'm along for the ride, you know, like you, Bill. I'm along for the ride. It's like, do I care if it's realistic? No. I'm laughing. I thought the writing was good.
In fact, something smart happens at the beginning of the movie that you glossed over, which is not only does he get kicked out on his ass, he actually jumps from, and I don't think this is, well, I'm giving it away, but it doesn't matter. Here's the point. He jumps from a second floor. He falls onto a car, and it's so unbelievable that he stands up, dusts himself off, and walks away that you go for the rest of the movie, oh, I guess I can buy anything.
Right.
So it really does set it up in a way that says we know this isn't going to be believable.
Well, I'm going to mention here that the next episode of Talking Pictures, we're back to Talking Pictures, the TV show, airs this Friday at 9:30 p.m. and has multiple airings over the weekend on CUNY TV, which is Channel 75 on Spectrum and Cablevision and Optimum and Channel 30 on Fios.
And you're
Fios.
Bringing this up because Neil, because did...
And it's with me, Bill McCuddy,
right.
Lisa Rossman.
Did Lisa like Long Shot?
Lisa Rossman liked Long Shot.
Right.
Really?
And I will send links out. But yes, she did. And most people liked the movie. I mean, I did not read any reviews where you said you heard that what Bill Brigoli said, that Seth Rogen is yelling too much. It's the first I heard of that, and that didn't bother me. I actually have seen Seth Rogen in the movie.
Actually, he's about as loud as you are, so you wouldn't notice.
Well,
Neil Rosen's autobiography would be called I'm Whispering as Loud as I Can.
That's a good title. I found it funny, as I said on the television show, and I will repeat myself here, although Judd Apatow had nothing to do with this particular movie, it's very Judd Apatow-esque in terms of the dialogue, in terms of the cultural references. If you watch the trailer, there's a scene which is very Judd Apatow-like where Seth Rogen dresses really schlubby and sloppy through the whole movie, and she's elegant, just very classy, and they give some guys playing a trick on her or some woman, and they get him this ridiculous looking outfit, and he goes,
well, they're in a Norwegian country or something where that garb
right, and there's
is
a Captain Crunch reference, which is
a lot of the jokes are really funny, like really like clever funny, I think, for one liners. So
if you like Judd Apatow style humor, even though he has nothing to do with this, I would recommend it. Bill Brigoli does not recommend it. Bill McCuddy does. I think they have good chemistry together.
Laugh out loud funny from beginning to end. But I will put one small asterisk on it, which is I am influenced by, and that's why I like to see comedies with a real audience. So it's an audience pleaser. It may not be your cup of tea.
Well, my wife, who rarely goes to the movies, went, and she did.
Because she has to go with you.
And she does. She did enjoy the movie. And
she begs me to take
Bill
her.
Over there doesn't like the movie.
Yeah, I know. Maybe
Mrs. Rosen begs me to take her.
I often realize that sometimes I'm sitting there not laughing at all, and everybody else is. So I would recommend it because not everybody's like me.
Listen, you know those audience extras that we're talking about that fill the screening rooms in the theaters. I mean, I can watch a comedy alone on Netflix without a laugh track, you know, on my television, and laugh by myself. And whether
that's just sad,
you know, so it doesn't really, I don't need, like, there was a movie years ago called, I think it was Troop Beverly Hills with Shelley Long.
Yeah.
And it was a theater.
Please don't tell me you laughed at that.
And they packed the theater with like 70% of the theater with these audience extras, and they're howling with laughter. And I just thought it was the most horrible film that I had seen. So it doesn't matter.
Well, you were right that time.
That an audience is laughing. By the way, I just saw something on YouTube yesterday, which was very interesting. Somebody took a scene from the Soup Nazi episode on Seinfeld and removed the laugh track. And I was reading all the comments, and I don't think it plays that well. And all the comments are like, it's even funnier without the laugh track. You could see the great acting, and you know, but they're pausing, you know, because the laughs are, it's just very weird. So I don't care that people.
Well, wait, but the timing would be all wrong without the laughs in there. So I get that. But did the concept seem as funny or?
I've seen the episode so many times. I'm used to watching it with the laugh track, It was missing. Somebody said it's like Curb Your Enthusiasm, which doesn't have a laugh track. But again, to your point, Bill McCuddy, yeah, the timing is wrong because they just removed the laugh track. So right. So it's like if we're having a conversation. Let's
five,
take a
beat six, away seven, eight.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. It's just weird. The whole thing is weird. And no, I didn't find it as funny as with the laugh track. But anyway, I digress. So
we'd be disappointed if you didn't.
I like Long Shot. Bill McCuddy likes it. Bill Bergoglio doesn't. Do with that information what you will. Moving on.
Especially since we've told it to you three
let's
times.
Let's talk about a movie called The Intruder with Dennis Quaid.
Let's give people a little taste of this crazy over-the-top movie.
Charlie is outside cutting the grass.
What?
Did you just get this out of the garage?
That's right, keep it. Something is really off with that guy.
Hey, Scott.
Hello.
Hey, stop drilling holes in my house.
It's not your house.
Well, I guess you never saw a house to Dennis Quaid. That's the moral to this story.
Well, there's this yuppie African-American couple, and he's making more money, and they want to buy their dream house, and they're looking at houses, and they see this
somewhere in the Napa Valley, we should say.
Yeah, they find this beautiful house that Dennis Quaid has like lived in for his whole life with his family and raised kids there. And
generations of his family have inbred there.
Right, and he goes, I really want you to have this house. You know, I'm very particular about who I sell my house to, but I think you guys would be perfect for this house. And he goes, they say, you know, we don't even want to redecorate the house. You know, we love your, it comes with the furniture and the paintings on the wall. And all
well,
that
there's
kind
a
of
tapestry
thing.
That comes into play.
Well,
later,
there's other things. Yeah. They're going to keep everything. So they go to Dennis Quaid. So, you know, why are you selling? He goes, well, you know, I'm living here alone. I'm moving to Florida. I'm going to move in with my daughter, you know? Okay. Cut to, it's a week later. He keeps showing up. He hasn't moved to Florida. They come home one day and he's mowing the lawn, you know, uninvited. He goes into the garage and mows the lawn. He shows up and he's just a month goes by. He just keeps cropping up uninvited, and he goes from unwelcome to creepy to stalky to
he doesn't try to sell them insurance or anything, does he?
What's that?
He doesn't try to sell them insurance.
No, then he goes to becoming like crazy serial stalky nut job. And that was my problem with the movie. My problem was that I've seen this movie done hundreds of times before, and to much better effect. I mean, Dennis Quaid is so over the top. I mean, he goes into literally this Jack Nicholson shining mode, you know? He goes from, like, kind of just a little kind of lonely guy who doesn't want to leave his house to just, like, a lunatic who's just, you know, terrorizing everybody with shotguns. And I don't know. I was bored. I thought it was ridiculous. And not only did I not buy into it, again, I've seen every scene. I say, okay, I know what's coming here, and I know what's coming there, and It just annoyed me.
Okay, here's why you're wrong. This and you didn't get Greta either a couple of months ago with
Isabelle
Huppert.
No, but
Isabel
I like that better than this.
The idea here, and they told us at the screening, and I've never seen this before, but before the screening started at Dolby, where you saw the other movie, that you're supposed to yell at this movie. So if you've ever wanted to yell at Dennis Quaid, this is your chance, because you're actually being encouraged to do that.
Why did you leave Meg Ryan?
This is the don't do that. So audiences have to know what's coming next. Because they're going to be, like Mystery Science 2000, they're going to be involved in, that's the way they're marketing this thing, in yelling at the screen. All of that said, it's still a load of, like, camp fun. And you and I went to, and I'm not going to go with everybody in the country, but you and I have seen a couple of movies where you've said, I only am glad I saw this piece of shit because I sat with Bill McCuddy.
Right, and you made it fun.
Because I make jokes through the whole thing. Right. And I think maybe, like,
well, I said on the TV show that this could be the kind of movie like Showgirls where it's unintentionally funny and you could just laugh at how bad it is. But
well, I think Dennis Quaid is good at being really over the top. So I'm going to say that and the young couple is fine. I mean,
they're fine.
She should be a little stronger. She should be better written. But and I think Lisa Rossman made that point on the television show, which we'll send you a link to shortly.
And there's a neighbor that was fine, that their friend, not a neighbor, friend.
Yeah, a co-worker that gets
his cigar. Yeah, I have to work late tonight. Can you look in on her in the house or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's got all the normal tropes. I'm just saying that it's more fun. I had more fun than you did, I think.
I was
what
bored.
I'm saying.
It wasn't just that I was, like, annoyed of, like, gee, I know what's coming. I was really bored. And then when he just goes into that psycho mode at the end.
Well, let me
know,
ask you this. If we'd been in a room with regular people, touching back to the other movie we saw, and people were yelling at the screen, would you have had more fun? Because I almost started yelling at the screen at the screening you and I were at. But
would you think that as a group kind of a thing,
you think that would be fun?
In a hypothetical situation, I'm imagining, okay, if I'm sitting in a movie and people are going like, you know, don't go in the kitchen. He's in there. Something like that.
Look behind you.
Or like, boo, you know.
The old Times Square theaters used to be that.
Yes.
Right.
But absolutely. But that's, you know, I mean... That would be different at every movie theater, you know. So I can't.
So you'd have to see it over and over again. You're saying, okay.
And the theaters.
We
didn't sit next to each
other. Studio's now
thrilled. We didn't see the movie together. You didn't make it fun for me. And I mean,
okay,
if you
want
to do Mystery Science Theater 3000 and you know take the movie and add comments with the robot, you know what I'm saying? funny comments, smug comments. That'd be fun. But Bill Bregoli did not see the movie, so we will play our game. And we will ask Bill Bregoli, okay, I did not like it, and you heard the reasons why, and Bill McCuddy liked it, and you heard the reasons why. What do you think?
I saw the trailer, and I didn't like the trailer. So I probably wouldn't go see it.
You would or would not?
Fuck,
right, I lost this game for the first time. This is the first time that you haven't agreed with me.
I finally win one. There you go. Now, moving on.
Wait, the young woman is hot, and she's naked in one scene.
No, she's not.
Yeah, they make love early in the movie.
I don't think she's naked. But anyway, Ask Dr. Ruth is a documentary about Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Take it away, Bill Bregoli.
It's directed by Ryan White, who also directed The Keepers, which is on Netflix. That's the one about the nun who was murdered years ago. And and also he did Good Old Frida about the Beatles' close friend.
Oh, the secretary that answered all their... We saw that, remember?
Yes, I remember that.
The woman
that
answered all their fan mail for like 50 years or something.
Yeah, we talked about
that. She ran the Beatles fan club.
Yeah.
So he's done those, and now he's taking on Dr. Ruth. It goes from her days in Germany, when she was taken on the Kindertransport to Switzerland, grew up, came to the United States.
Well, given up for adoption, we should say.
Given up for adoption. Came to the United States and became a sex therapist, and then big time on TV. I left out a whole lot of other parts, but it's an interesting. I've always imagined what her apartment looked like. And
she lives on the Upper West Side.
She's lived in the same Washington Heights apartment for 54 years.
Yeah, and I've met Pierre, her confidant and sort of writer, producer.
Yeah.
Right-hand man.
Right.
He's with her
all the time. Super nice.
Yeah. And it was an interesting... I met her. I think I've worked with her about a dozen times doing these satellite interviews where she would come in for 4 hours and talk to radio stations in 10-minute blocks.
Yeah.
And she would get a... We'd give her a muffin, a whole tray of stuff to eat. She'd take a muffin, cut it in half, and go, Bill, take the rest of this. Wrap it in a napkin. Give it to
That's
me.
Funny.
My second day in New York when I moved here, my first day on the job at Westwood One, I had to produce one of these 4-hour satellite tours, and I ran the board, and they told her it was my first day, and everything went pretty smoothly. But every time afterwards that I met her, she would always say to me, "Bill, I remember your first time."
Yes, I worked with her too at WYNY when she that was her first radio gig. And I'll get into that in a second. But did you like the movie?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I did not like the animation, to be honest with you. There are these scenes from her youth when she's falling in love and whatever. And they don't have any film of that. So they did some animation. It looked
pretty cheap.
Yeah,
it was okay. It wasn't great. Didn't blow me away. But, I mean, it's a Valentine to her. There's nobody on this thing going, she was all wrong and she screwed up my life.
Right.
And there's a lot you didn't talk about in her early life that I don't think we should talk about.
Right.
Because if you don't know that much about what she was before she was the Dr. Ruth on television, that'll be a nice surprise for you.
Yes,
but I know you have said that you knew all that, Neil.
Well,
so it wasn't a revelation for you.
Well, I would recommend the movie. You know, it's on Hulu, so you don't have to go to a theater to see it if you subscribe to Hulu. But so it's fine for that format to watch it on television. But here was my problem with the movie, even though I am recommending it. For the, I'd say 75 to 80% of the movie was her life, which Bill Bregoli described, you know, as a, you know, escaping Germany and, you know, living in Switzerland, as you said, part of the Kinder transport. And, you know, and
yeah, that's good. Go ahead and give away the things I said we weren't going to talk about.
I'm just repeating
I'm kidding.
What he said.
I just wanted to derail your little train before it got too far.
It's all about her life prior to becoming Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Right. And we've seen, as much as I admire this woman facing adversity in Europe and coming to America all alone and all that kind of stuff, there's been many movies about Holocaust survivors. What's unique about Dr. Ruth, and this movie fell short and gave it short shrift as far as I'm concerned, is what's amazing is how did a 50-year-old woman from Germany with a thick accent get to be in the number one market in America, New York, and get to be on a radio station and become a media powerhouse superstar?
I have an explanation.
That is only addressed for the last 20 minutes of the movie, and that to me is a 2-hour movie because that to me baffles me.
Neil, you are saying the whole movie is foreplay and no afterglow.
I'm saying that I would have done it reverse and done 20 minutes on.
Oh, you like it reverse.
And oh, what a funny guy. And I would have done at least an hour and 10 on how she became this media sensation, which is just kind of like...
Well, I guess that's a different movie. I think that this did a pretty good job, and you're recommending it, I'm recommending it, Bill's recommending it.
Yeah. But I'm recommending it with an asterisk.
Right. You don't find out about the media stuff.
So you're taking it up.
So answer my question.
So you would like to take it up the asterisk.
You said you have an answer for me. I said...
All right, you know, think of the time that she came up. It was the 1980s, and who was president?
It was 1979.
Yeah, 79, 80, she's coming
up. Reagan.
Reagan's president. America was pretty prudish in those days. And here is a woman talking about penises and vaginas and all that
stuff. I think
stuff.
We all remember it that way.
Yeah,
I think we all remember oh my God, this can't be.
Right, but don't you think that would have been more interesting to focus on that in the movie?
You know, I'm in the business.
It's like a montage in the movie. It's not missing completely.
Yeah, but it's kind of like throwing this on at the end and...
Would I have liked to have seen an interview with David Letterman? Because that was a good example of somebody who like brought her on for comedic value, but also let her be serious.
This was not said in the movie. I read this afterwards, and somebody made this point, which was great, that if she was like a real hot-looking blonde bombshell, you know,
she'd have been on Fox
with
News.
A sexy voice, you know, she in that era. Never would have gotten away with it. The fact that she was an older woman.
Yeah. And know, maybe wouldn't have been taken as seriously.
Right. The fact that she was an older woman that with an accent that was not, you know, nobody was like lusting after, you know, she had the credibility. She had a doctorate.
Also, she didn't soft sell
with this kind of
thing. She said she stuck by her guns. She was going to use these dirty words at the time, let's say, and she wasn't going to clean it up for anybody. So... she really stuck to it. And I'm not sure that she ever thought when she started doing this on the radio that she was going to turn into Dr. Ruth Westheimer. You guys have had the times you've met her. I've spent a lot of time with her in the last 10 years because almost any charitable event I do, she shows up, and at most of them, she lets me auction her off. We got $6,900. Which she said, she giggled at and said, we stop at, I was at $6,500, and I go, who'll make it $7,000? And she goes, we'll just say $69 and sell it there. So big laugh for that. It sold. This was for the Homeland Security Foundation. And so I've spent a lot of time with her. I know her little entourage of people. They're all charming.
Yeah.
You know, the woman is in her 90s now.
She's
and
90.
She's a fire. She's just like a...
Yeah, she says shows no signs of...
She was at a party the other night at the
Even
Playboy
the movie,
Club.
She's running around at 90. I'm like, man.
New York City Playboy Club. How perfect is that? She's there in the middle of this room just answering all the questions that all the bunnies had for her. I mean, that's...
Wow.
Well, here's my Dr. Ruth story. So it's Dr.
Oh, boy.
It's WYNY, which is the radio station that she started at, which is the NBC... FM station in 30 Rock back in the days when NBC owned radio stations. They no longer do. And I was working...
But we digress.
I was working in this radio research room, which is you would basically cold call people from a list and play them little snippets of songs to see if they like... They have to rate the songs, and then you'd give that information to the program director, and he would decide how to make a playlist. Okay.
Is anyone still listening?
I wanted to get out of this job, and Dr. Ruth was taking off in terms of her popularity, and I wanted to work for Dr. Ruth. So she was at the same station.
You had some questions, be honest.
And I saw her, and I said, Dr. Ruth, can I speak to you for a moment privately? And she goes, what's the matter? I go, can we just talk privately? So we go in her office and she closes the door. And I'm realizing as I'm launching into this that she thinks that I want to talk to her about like some problem.
Right.
Having in
Is
her
it the premature
area,
ejaculation you've her, told me about?
In her area of expertise. So,
was it the infertility thing that you've had a problem with
so
over the years?
So she goes, what is it? What is it? I said, well, listen, I'm working here, as you know, like a while. And I don't know, it's kind of a dead-end job, but I'd like to come and work for you. And she immediately shuts into down into another gear. And like instead of this caring concern that I was going to ask her some question, like in her level of, you know, in her, she's like, oh, I have nothing to do with that. That would be Tommy or whoever the guy was, you know, blah, 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 blah. Talk to him. And she wasn't interested anymore.
Did you ever ask her about the personal things that you've often shared with me over a few cocktails?
No, I had no personal things, Bill. And no, I did not ask her about any personal things. But she was a lovely.
So you never got to work with her. That's your story?
No, the story was is that she. Just...
That was riveting. Don't get me wrong. No, it's funny that you thought that she thought it was going to be
that's
some.
The, that's
you know,
the joke
I get
of,
it.
Of the story right. is that she thought I was going one way and with the story and with what I was going to ask her, and I was just basically looking. I was a kid looking
right.
for a job. So it was like 40 years ago, you know.
All right, we recommend this movie. Yep. What else? Is
yeah,
going
I
on?
Do. Okay, what else? So,
hey, let's talk about because I'm going to be blunt. This will get us a lot more listeners. Neil and I are not watching Game of Thrones this year.
Right.
In fact, I checked out early.
I never watched
time ago.
Any of, and I'm proud to say I've never watched any of Game of Thrones.
But
not my
the game. Rest of the world is not like Neil and I. We learn that every time we walk out of doors.
what happened
what's
last
going
Sunday?
On? Yeah,
why is everybody, it was the 10 thing, the top 10 things on Twitter trending that night.
It was the Battle of Winterfell.
I think 9 out of 10 things were Game of Thrones related. What in the world is happening?
It was a huge battle. It was 1 hour and 20 minutes of people fighting these weird dead, non-dead creatures, these zombies, basically.
You told us, by the way, before the season started, that some of the episodes were going to be like 45 minutes and some were going to be like an hour and a half.
Now we're getting into the long ones.
Was it interesting? Was it?
It was. Well, I'll tell you, there was a huge problem, and the reason it trended was that it was so dark. The battle takes place at night, and cameras have gotten a lot more sophisticated, and they can shoot in really low light. So they did, but there's something called video compression that happens,
and where it gets all splotchy looking.
It gets all. You often see all your blacks kind of plug up.
Even
on
if you have
TV
a really
set,
good TV.
Even if you have a really good.
Because what it's sending.
Enough,
and coming through the cable is getting
dark
fucked up.
Dark scenes actually look better on an old-fashioned cathode ray tube than they do
who
on
has
your,
one of those?
I know. No one does.
Neil?
And whoever
no,
adjusts their brightness
the
on
Luva?
Their flat screens and goes into
what?
The menu.
The Luva? What was it?
Many years
okay,
ago.
Sorry. All right.
Sorry.
All right, so.
So people at home with their flat screens who never adjust the menus because they're afraid to and going with factory settings found it way too dark and too hard to see who was killing who. And also, no major characters died, and some people were disappointed about that.
Did you ever see like an old black and white movie from like
oh
the
boy,
30s,
here we
40s
go.
And 50s?
Digression number six.
A night scene.
Yeah, day for night.
But they
day for night.
They cannot shoot. There's no technology to shoot
right.
at night.
So there's just like a filter.
Yeah. So and sometimes you see clouds up in the sky.
You
know,
look
yeah.
at the moon shadows those people are casting.
Yeah.
yeah
it's yeah, really they, bad.
That know? Drives my the wife crazy. And the other thing that drives Mrs. McCuddy, and this is my first digression, crazy is when it's raining in a movie and it's sunny out. She says, that's just a machine. The sun is over there. yeah. Come on, guys. At least well, do it on overcast day.
So I saw a couple of movies at the Tribeca Film Festival, three to be exact. I saw the new Billy Crystal movie, Standing Up, Falling Down. Not bad. Not bad.
Give us a 10-second synopsis
okay,
on that.
Okay.
This will be
4 minutes.
Crystal
is an alcoholic dermatologist who befriends a struggling stand-up comic who failed in L.A. and moves back to Long Island to... you know, reassess.
Become a film critic? Because this is sounding an awful like someone we know. Oh, all right. Okay.
So, and it's not bad. Billy Crystal's entertaining and funny. And
anybody else in it that
yeah,
we would know?
Yeah, I forgot the guy's name who plays the comic. He's from Parks and Rec or something like that. I don't know. I forgot the guy's name. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry to this gentleman. But they were both good. They had good chemistry together.
Reminder, we are professionals. We That's just right. needed to remind you.
They had good chemistry okay. together. And Billy Crystal's funny, and there's some good one-liners in it. I saw an awful film there called Georgetown, which is Christoph Waltz from all those Quentin Tarantino, two-time Academy Award winner Quentin Tarantino, Christoph Waltz from Django Unchained and from Inglourious Bastards. He's directs this movie, and he's also starring in it as kind of a con artist guy who marries this socialite played by this powerful socialite from Washington, D.C., played by Vanessa Redgrave. Annette Bening is her daughter. This is right at the beginning of the movie. She marries, he's married to Vanessa Redgrave, who's like 30 years older than him.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Annette Bening is like the daughter, Vanessa Redgrave's daughter, and it goes, something's off here, and she's on to him.
Tell me there's no three-way.
It's just a really boring, boring movie. I thought it was going to be good reading about it beforehand. From the synopsis that they wrote, it sounded like that Tim Burton movie that Christoph Waltz was in, where he was the con
Big
artist.
Eyes.
Big Eyes, right, where he was the con artist that was taking credit for his wife, who was painting all those. And I said, this sounds very similar.
I think I'm going to do a Neil Rosen here because I didn't hear it, but maybe you said it. This is his directorial debut.
Yes, it is.
You did say that.
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Okay,
yes.
Right.
And it is not good.
Is this his last directing job, do you think?
It's just great cast, but not good. Our friend Wilson Morales, I said, what are you doing at this one? He goes, well, the cast like this, how could you pass, you know? I take a pass on this movie when this goes into distribution. And I also saw a movie called Buffaloed with Zoe Deutsch, which I thought was kind of cute. And it's about she's from kind of like a trailer park kind of family in Buffalo, and a little better than a trailer, but it's not that
Can she
much
act? Because this is like the third thing she's been
she's
in
good.
Like a year.
She's good. And she gets
That's
accepted.
The daughter of Leah Thompson, right?
Yeah.
And Howard Deutsch. Howard Deutsch, the director. And, right. Yeah, right.
Well, she joins the debt collecting business, which is a very corrupt, shady business. But she makes
like
a lot.
Like 99 Houses, the thing with Andrew Garfield and Michael Shannon. Remember that thing?
That was a great movie. No, this is a comedy. And it's about how she's not happy with the debt collecting place that she's working for, so she strikes out on her own. And then the guy who's not a name guy, who acting wise, who runs they get into a war with each other, a rival war. It's not a great film, but you know, it's the kind of thing where if it comes on Netflix eventually or something, it's kind of amusing.
And nothing you saw was announced as
and
picked
Judy
up
Greer
yet.
Plays
or
her mom.
Love Judy Greer.
Yeah, and so those are the movies.
Hashtag Archer, and none of those were bought. As you saw them,
they were
shopping
around the Billy Crystal movie. They were looking for a distributor. That was I asked. They said this.
All right, we're a little into this Tribeca Film Festival. We made the point, and I don't want to dump on it. I said a couple weeks ago, name one successful movie that's ever come out of there. I don't want to repeat that. Oh God, I just did.
Mildly successful.
No, my point is, are you looking forward to anything that hasn't happened yet that you're going to see? Because it's not over yet.
No, most of these movies.
Did you go to the Beacon Theater for Scorsese and
let me tell you about
De Niro?
That. No, but I know a lot of people that did. And let me tell you, it's exactly how I envisioned it to be. There was no moderator. And you have Scorsese and De Niro sitting there alone.
Well, Scorsese was supposed to interview De Niro, right?
No, were just both basically talking. And they would show film clips, apparently, from the 9 movies that they did together. And I said to several people who went, I said, so let me get this straight.
Toughest ticket in town.
It was like $140 to get a great seat at the Beacon Theater to see this. So they would show a clip, and I go, did De Niro actually talk and tell stories? They go, no. Scorsese would tell a long story, and then De Niro would just go like, yeah, that was good, Marty. That was funny. That was good. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, a little bit. That's all he said.
So basically, it was an evening with Martin Scorsese where De Niro really didn't speak. He would just basically... Scorsese go, and I remember we were doing the take on Taxi Driver, and we couldn't get the we couldn't get the cabs to stop because we didn't have the police permit, and I told Bobby that you know we got to get this fit, and De Niro go, yeah, that was good, I remember, yep, yeah, I remember.
Okay, your De Niro is pretty flat, but that's a goddamn really good Scorsese, so I'm gonna promote that.
What, my imitation?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, thanks. I wasn't.
I've heard Fred Travolina. I've heard
oh, you're being
Rich
sarcastic.
Little.
I
I've heard everybody.
That you're being sarcastic.
No. That was pretty good. So,
nonetheless, so it was an evening with Martin Scorsese, apparently, according to the people that went there. I did not. And De Niro was kind of just there.
Did you see who made a guest appearance, but they didn't bring him up
in
to the
stage?
In
the audience, Leonardo DiCaprio stood up. Marty goes, they were talking about The Irishman, their upcoming movie, which is about the death of Jimmy Hoffa, and they said, Leo's here. Is Leo here, isn't he? And Leonardo DiCaprio.
Going to repeat one more time what they're going to do with that movie. Nobody has told you
I
that.
I like your
so
idea. It's very interesting.
They're going to show the first 2 hours in a theater, and then you're going to be able to go home and watch the other 6 hours.
No, they won't, because there was a ruling that came down a couple of weeks ago, where Spielberg was fighting Netflix, where he felt that a movie like Roma last year should not qualify to be in the Academy Awards, that it should have a 3-month exclusive theatrical run before it goes on somebody's television screen. And he lost. And now it's just like the way Roma is. As long as you run in either New York or L.A. for 5 or 6 days or something like that, or a week.
Okay. I understand why you're saying that. My theory doesn't fall for that. But my theory
it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. But you might as well put 2 hours in a theater and charge $18 a person to see the You'll make a lot more money than just putting it on Netflix.
I think The Irishman should run. Look, there's a Hulu movie coming out that I'm looking forward to seeing. An Amazon Studios movie coming out called Late Night, which is about a late night talk show host whose ratings are failing. It's a woman talk show host, and she hires who used to be
It's Emma Thompson, and she hires Mindy Kaling.
Exactly.
And it's Mindy's movie. I think she directed
it. It's a full theatrical run, and then it eventually will go to Amazon.
And it was a huge sale at Sundance. It was like a big one.
Netflix is not, I don't think Netflix cares about theatrical. I think they just care about people getting more people to pay to be subscribers to Netflix. I think
on the other hand,
the theatrical thing for them is just something to qualify for them.
Okay,
so they can
get a 6-hour movie is never going to qualify for
the Oscars. They're not going to make a 6-hour movie. I mean, how many hours do you think they shot of Casino? You think Scorsese?
I know for a fact.
You know, New York.
Listen to me. I know for a fact it runs 6 hours right now. I know somebody who saw 4.5 hours of it.
But let's say Netflix didn't exist and Scorsese was just making a movie.
Listen to what I'm saying.
Release a 6-hour movie.
No, you're not listening to me. If they put out a 2-hour satisfying, like part one or something, Godfather existed before Godfather 2, Mannion of the Spring and Rites of Spring. Remember those two?
It was John DeFloretta and Mannion of the Spring.
John DeFloretta and Mannion of the Spring. Thank you.
But those were shot together and it was shown in France as a 6-hour movie, and in America it was chopped up.
Okay, all I'm saying is if they don't take a 2-hour version and put it in a theater, it can't win anything at the Academy Awards. But if they do, it's at least eligible.
Well, maybe.
That's what I'm saying.
Well,
all right,
we'll see. But my point is that I agree with Spielberg to a large extent, and I'd like your opinions on this, that I don't really see the difference if you're going to release something and it's going to go straight to Netflix, what the difference between a movie what would differentiate a movie qualifying for an Emmy Award or a movie qualifying for an Oscar.
I think the real question is why he backed down so quickly, and I wonder if it's because Amazon picked up a movie that he's got in development.
I think the Supreme Court...
He's part of that Apple deal, I think.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he got a lot of flack for people saying, hey, what are you doing?
Wasn't there some kind of legal thing that the Supreme Court or some court intervened and said, you know, it's unconstitutional or something to prevent? There was some kind of legal thing component to this whole...
All I know is he was mad. He's not mad anymore.
Answer my question.
We're going to get more swag than we ever got.
Yeah, I really think... Imagine if you're Netflix and you think, we didn't spend enough on Roma last year because it didn't win. I mean, for those of you who haven't listened before, we got so much shit for Roma.
A book, a pillow.
There's one now.
A pillow, yeah.
Another, a poster.
We got the book itself was worth $175.
A signed poster.
And a signed poster if you...
Which I declined to get, but... So answer my question.
To send me.
What will differentiate a movie, an HBO movie that's really, you know, like... Behind the Candelabra, Matt Damon, directed by Steven Soderbergh, Michael
Nothing,
Douglas.
Nothing, but it'll...
What gets eligible for an Emmy Award and what gets eligible for an Oscar? What's the difference? Really, I would like an answer to the question. Do you have one?
Emmy Awards are broadcast TV. There is no streaming
HBO
awards
is not broadcast TV. That's cable TV.
All right, cable. It's cable or broadcast. You know, it's in your home. You don't have to...
Netflix.
Pay money. Yeah, but Netflix, is basically streaming. It's a different delivery system.
I think the real answer to the question is there isn't an answer. The reason I'm saying that is because the formats are changing, the platforms are changing. So eventually, the Emmy rules are going to change, or eventually, the Oscar rules are going to change because they're going to have to adapt to what's happening in the marketplace. So yes, we're in this state of limbo. Where 2 months ago, Steven Spielberg thought this is the biggest mistake on the planet. And now he says, yeah, I guess I'm okay with that. It's all kind of changing. So I don't know the real answer to your question.
So things will change. That's a great answer. We're in the eye of the hurricane right now. Things will sort
Neil,
out.
Neil, people who listen to this podcast know you ask stupid questions, I have great answers.
Oh, yes.
That's just
yes. Oh.
And we watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
Well,
what's
we
happening next
out?
Week?
Why
guys?
Next week? Notice I don't have to look
and
at
that
the
was
phone.
Not a stupid question. That was a very
no,
stupid
it was a very good
question.
Detective Pikachu.
But it's not the first time you've asked it.
Detective Pikachu, pinch me.
Yeah, and Palms. That's the one where the old ladies want to be cheerleaders.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys see the Angelica
that
Houston?
That trailer looks awful.
Well, yeah. Wait a minute. Did you read the Angelica Houston thing in New York Magazine this week?
No.
Remember a couple of weeks ago I was telling you how great the Peter Bogdanovich interview
right.
was, and you went and said, oh, no, I'm going to go read that. I don't think
I
it
read
was
it.
As good as you said. Okay. Yesterday, Angelica Houston, and now it's popped on page 6 and all kinds of places, brought so much shit down on so many different people, including Oprah Winfrey. You got to read this thing. It's unbelievable. But she, one of the things she said was about the kind of projects she's attracted to. Well, you'd never see me making an old lady becoming cheerleaders movie. That's ridiculous. I've never, you know, like she dissed Nicholson. She said he was a very frequent Coke user. And to him, it was like an espresso having a hit of cocaine. It was just a bump for him.
Interesting.
She goes, she's got, hey, Sue,
she was his.
Come here.
She was his like right. girlfriend for many
yeah,
years.
Yeah, for like 13 or 14 years. And she met with a lawyer at the end of their relationship. And the lawyer tells her, you're not going to get anything. And she ended up getting a house. There is one great anecdote after the other in this thing. And it reminded
it's
me
in
of
New
it
York
because
Magazine
you said Palms.
This week.
New York Magazine.
Is it available online?
Yeah.
Do you have to subscribe?
Yeah,
subscribe online. There is a paywall for New York.
Yeah, the Oprah story. There, Sue said,
tell us the Oprah
like
story
Hitchcock, she
go.
Appears once. So Oprah lost to Angelica Houston the year she was nominated for
Color
The
Purple.
Color Purple,
yeah.
And Angelica Houston was nominated for Pritzi's Honor.
Right.
Everyone, including her dad and everyone in Pritzi's Honor, was nominated. By the way, she worked for Scale. She got $14,000 for that movie. She couldn't get another dime because they didn't want her. She beats Oprah Winfrey that night, who thought she was going to win.
For Best Supporting Actress.
And the rest of her life, Oprah won't speak to her. To the point where, at a party where she was talking... Sue, who was she talking to?
I can't remember.
Somebody really famous. And Oprah comes over and stands between them with her back to Angelica Houston. And she's, I'm looking at Oprah's head. And starts talking to the person and completely brushes her off. And never spoke to her.
Wow, that's
And she has the class to say, Angelica, I think she's great. She's made a lot of great strides for women. I respect her, but she hates my guts. So that's those are just five of the things in this thing. I highly recommend
it. And there's many more.
Yeah.
Well, that's the most interesting thing you've said on this entire podcast. And now, to play the game, I'm going to read the article. Are you going
to
read the article, Bill?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone listening.
I subscribe to it online, so I can actually.
And
so
what else do we have next week?
We also have Tolkien. It's a biopic about Tolkien.
Tolkien.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who wrote
which I saw. So
oh, is that any good?
We'll
who's Tolkien?
Why don't we tune in next week and find it?
We will, but
Tolkien,
remind me who
plays
it. I forget who plays it. I think it's Nicholas Holt.
Nicholas Holt is who it is.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go. Well, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And you can reach me, Neil Rosenapples. You can reach...
at Bill McCuddy.
And Bill...
I'll be hanging out with Angelica Houston
Carrier
at the bar.
Pigeons, did you say?
Carrier
Pigeons. There
Carrier
you go.
Pigeons.
Well, anyway, as I said, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.